are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, December 19th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Michael Flynn's sentencing hearing did not go as planned. Meanwhile, not huge, but the Senate does take a significant step in prison reform. Meanwhile, Donald Trump forced to shut down his fake charity in New York State in the midst of an ongoing New York State Attorney General's investigation.
Gonna hurt a lot of families.
So shame. Gonna really hurt the Tim Tebow signed helmet market. Meanwhile, Facebook protected your data so it could give it away. Trump bans bump stocks via executive action. That'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
What if it's called triangulation?
And all 83 of the ethics complaints filed against Justice Kavanaugh have been dismissed. Basically, because what are you going to do about it anyway? Federal court rules to compel an unnamed foreign company to give evidence in the Mueller probe. Lawsuit filed to challenge Wisconsin's Republicans' power grab and cuts to early voting. And time for you to meet the Not Your Dad's Blue Dog Dems. Not quite as blue, not quite as doggy, and not quite as many of them. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. It is hump day, and it's not just hump day. It's a special hump day, ladies and gentlemen, because we are humping over the week that is the last week before our vacation. So if there's an extra twinkle in our eyes or a bounce to our steps, now you know why. Can we just play a clip that Lizard Rumsfeld, that one that he pulled? Our members and we had an audio problem with the post that we did of the Brendan Straka, video, and so we fixed it. We're gonna re-up it.
Yeah, was fixed for members. If you want to re-download that, if you want to hear it a little bit better, his audio got a bit quiet toward the end of it, so that's fixed now.
Yeah, and Lizard Rumsfeld on Twitter. Yeah.
You guys had quite the exchange of ideas.
We had quite an exchange of ideas. And this is at one point when he apparently wanted to. He had a problem, this guy Brandon, with Jamie, like a long-standing problem. At one point he said, the girl who keeps you from talking to people or something. Like he thought like you were, I don't know.
That's actually officially part of Jamie's job description.
Now we should say, Jamie is youthful. She is not in her teens or younger. Brandon did not get the message. This little boy did not get the message. And so I had to explain to this little boy what Jamie does, because he thought, here is this just one segment that Lizard Rumsfeld clipped.
Mock people. I will concede we were mocking your video.
The girl on your show, is she associated with Antifa?
She has a podcast called Antifada.
What does that mean?
The Antifada? It's a...
I know what Antifa is, but what is Antifada? I don't know what that is.
Well, it is a... I think it is a play on Antifa and the Intifada. And so...
Yes, he started blinking. He didn't... I don't think he knew what the Intifada was. Now, we should also add, we got an email. Now, I don't want to make too much a big deal of this because I think we don't have the full data, but it is an interesting thing. So I'm going to see if I can find this here. Someone emailed, and apparently, where is that thing? There is a place you can go, a site, I guess, where you can look up people's voting records. And apparently, this is sort of funny, we don't have the most recent data as to how Brandon has registered. But as of 2017, he had not registered as a Republican, which is weird.
Is he an independent because he's an independent thinker?
It could be. But the strange thing is that I believe his origin story was that he voted for Hillary. Now, I may get this wrong, okay? And if I do, I apologize.
You'll issue a correction.
I will issue a correction. But here it is. You can go to the Vote With Me app, and it lets you look up voter registration and voting history of people. And that's an interesting, I had no idea that existed. I was actually wondering about that. Apparently, he did not vote in the 2016 general election.
Whoa.
Now, I don't know that he's ever claimed that he did. But anyways, I don't want to spend too much time
on
this.
Can I just do a little self-critique here? If that's all that we have, it's pretty impotent.
What do you mean?
All we have is he didn't vote in 2016, and the whole core of his origin story is that he voted for Hillary Clinton and got fed up. That's an impotent performance.
It's impotent.
Court.
It is impotent.
Much like the Democrats winning a historic, unprecedented in the modern era House majority.
One might say
that
apathetic.
Type of impotence.
Apathetic.
I think we were just apathetically being impotent.
Now, look, it's all fun and games when we make fun of him without him being here. Of course,
we
I did
talk about him quite a bit.
I did make fun of him to his face, and that is available to you as a member if you sign up at jointhemajorityreport.com. Just wanted to let you know about that audio.
It's worth it, folks.
Dude, it's really fun.
I'm going to make it a new policy from now on that if someone gets upset that we have made fun of someone and not to their face, I will give them the opportunity to have me do it to their face.
On their show.
On this show or on their show or on just no show. Just like maybe we can meet, have a drink, and I will make fun of you to your face.
Is that Antifa?
One of today's sponsors is Skillshare. And the first 500 people, can't guarantee it's still 500, folks, who go to skl.sh/majority are going to get 2 whole months of totally free access to Skillshare's entire library of super quality online courses and tutorials. Skillshare is a vibrant online learning community that offers courses on everything from design to video editing, photography, businesses, technology, cooking, meditation, everything in between. There are Skillshare courses for everyone. You'll have no problem finding courses that will be useful to you both in your personal and your professional life. Whether you want to sharpen your skills with something you already love doing or you want to learn how to do something totally new, Skillshare has you covered. They have courses for entrepreneurs, courses on computer coding, web development, personal nutrition, learning new languages, Photoshop, you name it. You know, this occurs to me as I'm reading this. My son is named after my great uncle Saul, who lived to 104 years and was taking classes at a learning annex into, like, at the last one I think he took was 102 years old.
No, I don't know if I'm making this up or maybe it's correlation instead of causation, but I think there are studies that actually, like, continuing doing things like that helps extend your life.
Honestly,
it's good for your health.
Like, to have a resolution that, like, I'm going to learn one, like, significant new skill per month. I'm not going to, you know, become a master of it, but to learn that one skill, I think, is a great thing you can do for yourself, and particularly in this era of just relentless horribleness. It is a good thing to do for yourself. I, of course, have learned knife cutting skills, not cutting knives. I mean, food cutting with knives. It's like one of those narrow things that I would never go to a learning annex for. And I certainly, with all due respect, I don't want to be around other people who want to know that. I want to be in person. I just want to do it alone. I'll learn that skill set.
Yeah, but not with you.
Exactly. Well, I mean, look, sometimes it's easier just to, like, let me just learn what I got to learn. I don't want to, you know, there's other chit chat I don't need. You can get 2 entire months of free access to every single course offered by Skillshare by going to skl.sh/majority. Just think of everything you'll have at your fingertips for 2 whole months. Do this before Christmas break. If you're getting like a couple of days off for Christmas, this is a great thing to do. Again, that's skl.sh/majority. I put a link underneath this video. If you're watching on YouTube or if you're listening on the podcast, it's in the podcast. Also, one of today's sponsors is privacy.com/majority. And actually, on some level, you can use this for a lot of the stuff that we talk about on this program in terms of like offers. Because privacy.com, it's a totally free service. Apparently, they get paid by the banks and the credit card services. They let you buy anything online without having to give out your credit card number. So it lets you prevent companies from overcharging you, A. And B, you can use it when you're signing up for free, to try out a free service, any type of service. And if you forget that you did it, and the free service expires and they start charging you, which is the way a lot of these things work, they have a dummy credit card and they can't charge you past that date. So it just takes a couple of minutes to link your bank account to privacy.com account. And then you're able to create virtual credit card numbers, which are linked to your bank account. You can create as many virtual cards as you want. You can delete them. You can freeze them and unfreeze them. You can set limits on each card. It's great for signing up for free trials because you can just create a virtual card once and delete it, knowing that you'll never be charged once the trial is over. I don't know if you can use this for a service like Venmo. I'm not sure about that, actually. But if you could, worthwhile. It's just a great way to have a dummy thing in between you and the point where things could go wrong. It protects you when companies get hacked and people's information stolen because you're not giving out your real credit card number. Each card is locked to a merchant, so you're totally protected against fraud and unauthorized use of your card. Privacy.com mobile app and desktop browser extension make it incredibly easy for you to manage your wallet of virtual cards and allow you to autofill your virtual card number at the click of a button when you're shopping online. There are countless different advantages to using a service like this to pay your bills and buy things online. You can find out more and get 100% free and unlimited access by going to privacy.com/majority. That's privacy.com/majority. I put a link underneath this video if you're watching on YouTube. If you're not and you're listening, it's on the podcast description, so check it out. And as always, if you don't want to hear any ads on the program, become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. All right, let's go first to, we'll get to the Flynn thing. I'll just keep you an update on it. I mean, it's pretty fascinating from a couple of different perspectives, I have to say. We're going to talk about Tucker Carlson's ads fleeing from his show. But first, let's start with the wall. It was just announced moments ago that Mitch McConnell is going to be putting up a vote on a continuing resolution in the Senate. my guess is that would not happen unless he thought he had the votes. So I suspect we're going to see a no government shutdown. They're punting till February. Is that right, Brendan? The idea, it's interesting. Initially the idea was we don't want to punt to February because the Democrats come in and they have more leverage over the budget. But as I was saying in the run-up to the midterm elections, I'm not convinced that Donald Trump and the White House doesn't want the Democrats to take over on some level. I think there was reasons for him to be concerned about all the investigations and whatnot, but I suspect at this point, can there really even be more investigations?
What's the phrase that you use? Baked into the cake.
Well, baked into the cake, but also it's like if you are being shot at with a machine gun and someone's hacking at you with a machete and someone else is lighting you on fire, Saturday Night Live is making fun of you. Are you really that concerned at the idea that you might get run over by a car? I mean, you know, at that point, it's like, but what this does politically for Trump is to say, I can't get something done because I'm being obstructed by the Democrats. And he will be obstructed by the Democrats because we will be all upset if he's not obstructed by the Democrats. So I guess the idea is we're going to punt to February and then we can actually blame the Democrats for the government shutdown then is what their argument's going to be. It's very hard to blame the Democrats for a government shutdown when your party controls both houses. And it is ostensibly over the fact that here's the reality. No one wants to fund the wall, even if it's artistic and beautiful and really just a fence that you could see through. But the administration is trying to make an argument that it's not going to cost America anything. You'll recall Mexico was going to pay for the wall. And Trump tweeted out this morning. Mexico is paying, in parentheses, indirectly, for the wall through the new USMCA, the replacement for NAFTA, exclamation part. Far more money coming to the U.S. because of the tremendous dangers at the border, including large-scale criminal and drug inflow. The United States military will build the wall. I guess there was a missing period there. But nevertheless, the argument is that I'm trying to parse this out.
Go ahead. It's a rigorous one.
Now, I think Trump understands that if more money was coming to the United States, it wouldn't actually be coming to the United States Treasury. It would be coming to United States citizens, theoretically.
I was being sarcastic.
And then the argument would be they're going to pay taxes on that money, and that's where the money's going to come from. Now, there are no official estimates as to how much more economic activity, if any, is going to be generated in this country by the USMCA. But if you ostensibly, it would be whatever, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars so that you could get the extra $5 billion in taxes to pay for the wall. Of course, we're still U.S. taxpayer money is paying for the wall, which is not Mexico. But imagine if you actually were a human being and you had to try and sell this to somebody and you didn't do it through Twitter. You actually had to stand in front of them. How would you react? Well, we don't have to ask that hypothetical question because here is Sarah Sanders trying to sell this BS to the White House press corps.
With the deficit ballooning to over $1 trillion under this president, where are the additional monies for this wall going to come from? And why is he asking the American taxpayer for them when he promised Mexico was going to pay.
Look, we're not asking American taxpayers for that. We are looking at existing funding through other agencies right now that we can draw on to do that in immediately. So the president's been clear. The president has been clear that the USMCA deal would provide additional revenue through that deal that would show that Mexico is paying.
Pause it. The best is the look on this reporter's face when she says those very words. He just go back just a little bit. I'm sorry, folks. I mean, I just love to look at the look of shock. I mean, the idea that people can be shocked by any of this on some level anymore. Like, I don't know how you show up to that place every day for work and there's actually anything that come out of anybody's mouth where you're like, wait, what? Here it is.
Has been clear that the USMCA deal would provide additional revenue through that deal that would show that Mexico is paying for the wall.
The Treasury, though, the trade benefits, if there are any, don't go to the Treasury.
He's saying that the revenue provided and the money that would be saved through the USMCA deal, we could pay for the wall four times over. And by doing that new trade deal, we have the opportunity to pay for the wall.
But trade benefits go to private citizens. Look, they don't go to the United States Treasury.
He's talking about the general revenue that comes from that.
You're going to tax.
No, we're not taxing. We're talking about additional revenue that wouldn't have existed without the president getting a new deal.
Have you done the math on that?
There have been a number of things that we've looked at in which we know we'll have additional revenue that comes in through the USMCA.
From the USMCA into the Treasury?
We think there will be more than that that comes in.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to do... I mean... What's amazing is she knows she's going to go out and tell that lie, and she still there's no number. She can't even make it up. She couldn't even get out there and say like, "Well, we project." I mean, we've seen projections of anywhere from $100 to $200 billion worth of new activity.
I'm not going to just come out here and give you fake numbers. I'm being honest about the stats really seriously.
Projected numbers, and here's the thing: we are living in an era where. This is none of what we just saw is relevant. It's not relevant from an electoral standpoint because most people won't watch that. It's not relevant in terms of the people on Capitol Hill because the Republicans are as despicable as the Trump administration. They are one in the same. The only difference is they don't have to say these dumb things because somebody else down on Pennsylvania Avenue will say the dumb things for them. Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan have been the greatest enablers of every horrific thing that has happened in this country. Paul Ryan even had the audacity the other night to come out and call for greater immigration for the Irish. For the Irish, we are housing 15,000 children right now. And the only time that he's talked about probably said the words immigrants in months, if not years, has been to call for more Irish immigration. I mean, give me a break. The idea that we're not seeing tens, if not dozens, of reported pieces or think pieces in the establishment news media about how wretched of a human being Paul Ryan is a disservice to the country. If you gave me like 3 days at the FCC, I would revoke all of their licenses. Most of them are not licensed, but certainly the major networks would get their license revoked by me.
I'm going to revoke her license to wear a Peter Pan collar. She is not doing Manic Pixie Dream Girls any favors with that representation.
People don't know that you're in charge of that, too.
This is my Manic Pixie Dream Girl outfit. I'm going to put it on, and then I'm going to lie about immigrants. Excuse torturing children.
Yeah, I mean, I got to consult with the others at the Politburo, but
I'm a big fan
I think
of
it'll...
Zoe Deschanel.
The DSA Sumptuary Caucus.
I should tell you, just as an update... You know, we told you the story of the 7-year-old girl who had traveled through Mexico. She was Guatemalan. She died in the custody of the U.S. Border Patrol. According to the Border Patrol, she was there for 8 hours. At the end of those 8 hours, she had 105-degree temperature. They claimed it was because she had not eaten or drank water for days. that they had gone through they'd been traveling through Mexico. They sent her to a hospital. Within 24 hours, she was dead. They were arrested along with about 160 other people. The idea that you don't go to the kids first and make sure that they're in decent health, it just seems to me to be both bizarre and, in another respect, unsurprising based upon our policies here. The lawyers of the dad, I guess the guy's name is Jacqueline Call. He does not speak Spanish. The girl was Jacqueline. The father is Neri. They don't speak Spanish. They actually speak a native a dialect, I guess a Mayan, a derivation of Mayan. And so when he speaks the Quechua language, and he communicated with border agents in Spanish, but it's like a second or third language. And they had him sign documents, obviously, in a language that he did not understand. And so getting the story straight is unclear. But according to the father, she at least appeared to be in good health as they traveled through Mexico. They had not been traveling through the desert for days before she was taken into custody. It appears that they had been, they were arrested on December 6th in New Mexico. Hours later, they were placed on the bus. It does not appear that any of what the Border Patrol said about what she was doing beforehand is true. They were traveling with a group, and they were dropped off in Mexico about 90 minutes from the border. So they walked for 90 minutes.
They're covering up a killing that they're responsible for.
I don't know.
That's why they're lying.
They're certainly, I don't know if they killed her.
Well, no, excuse me.
But they're
a
covering up
that they're
for yes, a death that they are complicit in,
right.
In terms
me.
Of their negligence.
Yes.
The idea that this kid was not in any way exhibiting any pain or whatnot, just all of a sudden had 105 degree temperature 8 hours later, just stretches the imagination. And so it's unclear what's going on in that holding area. And apparently they haven't let anybody in yet. So who knows?
Merkley went to try to visit another one of these places.
Well, that was where they were housing the children.
Right.
But I don't think that she was housed separately.
Right. No,
they
no,
had
no.
yet to separate
yeah, I don't
them.
Think so. Yeah.
So just an update on that. Meanwhile, Fox and Friends has come up with another idea on how to fund this wall. The obsession with the wall is fascinating because at this point, it might as well be like a concrete tire around the necks of the Republican Party, because for whatever reason, Donald Trump feels like he can't motivate his base unless he delivers on the wall. And I don't know if they actually care or not that the wall is delivered. But even if it does, like, it just seems to be like it's clearly not enough people. And every time they talk about the wall, they seem to dig a deeper and deeper hole for themselves. Here is Michael Goodwin, a New York Post columnist already, so you don't hold this guy in particularly high esteem. But he has an alternative idea about the wall that's going to make it all go away.
Well, there was no real funding for the wall. I mean, this is a Republican issue as well as a Democrat issue. Clearly, the public supports strong border security. I think many people, I'm not sure the majority of the public thinks a wall is absolutely essential, but most people understand that a wall has to be part of the solution to border problems that we have.
So is there Posse, a...
I don't think that's true, actually. I think the polling shows that most people don't think a wall needs to be part of that. I'm not even sure that most people like the broader idea that he's talking about in terms of what so-called border security. But nevertheless, continue.
Problems that we have.
So is there a private way to do this?
There is. You can create a GoFundMe operation. Oh. Others suggest other ways. There is an existing effort called, I think, fundthewall.com, run by a sheriff's association that's raised some money, but nowhere near what is needed. And yet, according to my mail, a lot of people are willing to chip in. One reader writes to me and says, if the $63 million people who voted for Donald Trump each contributed $80, that would get you near the $5 billion mark. And I think that's the kind of thing that needs to happen. It could be a people's wall. I don't really care about the mechanism. Do you do a tax check off of your retirement account? There are a number of ideas that I include in the column. But the important thing is the public could step in and effectively do this thing that the president wants. And there are ways for the government to accept private donations.
Right.
And this could be done.
Yeah. It could be done. So we just got to get those 63 million people who voted for Trump to give $80 each. Now, I will say I just went to fundthewall.com and they have already raised $152,000 towards the $450 million that they're trying to raise. And what's awesome about this, they have like one of those, bars that go across like this to measure their progress. Scroll down. You'll see it here. And you can't even tell what color that they're using to get to there because it hasn't even – there's. Can you zoom in? Wait a second. I think I see it. Zoom in. Zoom in a little bit more. Keep zooming. Come down. Go down. I think you can see it. Yes. See it? It's right there. Hold on. He's going to zoom in. And yeah, you can see it. Almost the curvature of the...
There it is.
There it is. That's. If you ever wanted to know what $152,000 of $450 million looks like, that's what it looks like. Now, of course, $450 million, that's one-tenth of the wall. So really...
How committed is Trump's base?
Yeah, it's really... I want to see profile after profile on Trump voters who refuse to help fund the wall, right?
Yeah.
Like, where are all the private market people who are always talking about, you want government to do this, you want government to do that? This is very strange.
This is a little bit of embody the change you seek in the world here, folks.
Exactly.
I also think that I am, and we should be, working on a project to support this democratized version of the wall, and let's get on it, guys.
Well, look, folks, this is what we're going to do. We're going to start fundraising, not from any of you who hear our voices, but maybe we should just set up a buildthewallrightnow.com.
Right,
I bet
now.
You that like that's the only one that might be available.
Build the wall right now.
Yeah, or we can go through some options after
I honestly think that like we should contemplate that. We should have the end of the year executive meeting at the Majority Report and see if we start a Build the Wall Right Now campaign, go advertise and raise some money.
You better hope they don't crowdfund that wall, because if it somehow comes to pass that they build it and nothing happens because it's stupid, like he's not going to have that as a campaign thing anymore.
That's true. That's a good point. But he seems to really think it needs to happen. All right. Let's talk a little bit. I want to talk about the Senate vote on law reform and then Elizabeth Warren's proposal and what I think that signifies in terms of where the race is, what's happening with the race. Because there's a lot of interesting things going on in the Senate with Democratic senators in terms of bills they're putting up that give you a notion of where they're coming from and what they're planning to offer the country. But yesterday, in a vote of 87 to 12, and that includes, you do the math, 38 Republicans joining the 49 members of the Democrats, because all Democrats, and I guess 37, because probably Bernie as well. or no, 49 would be all the Democratic members of the caucus, I would say. The First Step Act passed. It basically only impacts the federal prison system. And I think federal prison accounts for maybe 10% of all people in prison, somewhere around there. And it allows inmates to earn reduced sentences, attempts to lower recidivism rates. There is a different version that passed the House, so they're going to have to reconcile those, but there's every reason to believe that a Democratic House will be just as easy, if not easier, to deal with than a Republican House. It does not cover state prisons or jails or it will essentially shave a collective 53,000 years off the sentences of federal inmates over the next 10 years. That's according to the CBO. There were about 181,000 federal inmates as of sometime this month, the first couple weeks of this month. There were some amendments that made what is a fairly compromised bill even more compromised. That included sort of some bumps for faith-based organizations. If you drink the Jesus juice, you can get out a little bit quicker or something. Ted Cruz limited the number of convicts who are eligible for earned time credits. But of course,
you're welcome.
He is such a despicable, disgusting thing.
But look, it is it's positive. It's moving in the right direction, right?
No question.
I mean, it is good, but insufficient. Key factor apparently was that Jared Kushner supported this because his dad's in federal prison. So, and as Neil Meyer, I don't know who this guy is, the editor at. The call. He said the lesson here is ending mass incarceration requires throwing more parents of rich and powerful in prison. And frankly, I mean, we've seen this lesson before, right? Marriage equality gets support from Republican lawmakers who find out that their kids are gay. We see people who. Republican lawmakers whose family members get sick, they become much more supportive of things like pre-existing condition, getting rid of bans on pre-existing condition or increased health insurance. This is the most conservative Republican thing in the world, which is to have absolutely no empathy or understanding of a problem until it directly impacts them. And then all of a sudden, they become far more aware of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a prison abolitionist, but this might be one case where the carceral solution is a step in the right direction.
There you have it. And I'm trying to find, you know, that that Kurt Bardella thing. Maybe I can't find that. I had that in my stack here, and it's gone. But Kurt Bardella wrote an interesting thing. This guy is sort of an interesting character. I mean, I'm not I don't want to get too carried away here because, you know, I don't like to give people a huge amount of credit for being a, you know, a decent human being. I feel like that should be the baseline of humanity. But Kurt Bardella, he wrote a piece in the USA Today entitled, "I Became a Democrat a Year Ago and I Found My Own Voice. It Changed Everything." And he announced a year ago that he was going to leave the Republican Party. This is a guy who was he was a communications person, I think, for Breitbart at one point. He was a staffer and would campaign for Daryl Issa, a Republican from California. And the thing that I found really fascinating about this piece was the The guy is Asian American. And, you know, a lot of times you see like those guys walking around with the Proud Boys in these groups that ostensibly are not white supremacist groups, but, you know, we're just white nationalists. We just think that you shouldn't pick on white people, or that the country's culture is getting, you know, is threatened.
I'm a Western chauvinist.
Yes. We have no sovereignty in this country if we allow too many immigrants in. And what does that actually mean? I mean, because we don't have an instance of immigrants, first generation immigrants, or second generation, or, you know, first generation immigrants or undocumented immigrants literally taking over the country. I think there are some instances of some recent immigrants running for local elections and maybe, you know, Congress. But we don't, I don't know if you know this, we don't have any instances of undocumented immigrants or even first-generation immigrants taking over the country and taking away our sovereignty as a country. So that means when people say that, what they're talking about are a set of values that they perceive as being basically white values. And
well, not everybody realizes that there's white nationalism behind it, though. Like, if you don't dig that deep into it.
Without a doubt.
Check out Christian Piccolini explains precisely this dynamic, what Sam's saying exactly. The signal to the actual groups of what's really being said. And the conduit and easing in of people who don't have those politics.
Right.
But
and some people can stay
appealing.
In the conduit zone.
That's exactly
and
right.
So here, this is what's interesting, just to hear him talk about this. And like I say, you know, I tend to be a little bit of a skeptical person and a little bit jaded, but I found this to be fascinating and a little bit, you know, I have some empathy for this guy. He said, my first year as a Democrat has given me an appreciation for the gulf between the worldviews of Republicans and Democrats. Even how we digest and process information is so different. In the decade I spent working in Republican politics in Washington, I don't think I ever heard climate change come up as a serious topic of social conversation. And he said, I found the same thing to be true about gun law reform, racial inequality, social justice, and sexism. As a Republican, I just never talk about these things. But as a Democrat, I talk about them all the time. I'll tell you, being a Democrat is a heck of a lot more emotionally exhausting than being a Republican was. Because I care about a lot more things than I used to. There must be some wisdom in the old saying that ignorance is bliss. It's funny because I remember as a Republican, we would often mock bleeding heart liberals who are always caring so much. I think to myself now, what the hell is wrong with these Republicans who don't seem to care about anything at all? And it's sort of fascinating how someone finds themselves in that situation. Yeah. This is where it gets really interesting in that respect. On a personal level, one of the biggest changes for me, and look, I don't know what kind of Democrat he is. I don't know what his politics are, you know, when the rubber meets the ground. But in terms of this sort of conversion that he goes through, there's also like an emotional element to it that is fascinating to me in terms of the way that one identifies with the world and what one has to do to subjugate certain things, to move in certain circles. And so he writes, on a personal level, one of the biggest changes for me has been how I view the issues of race. I've spent the bulk of my life avoiding race. My first name is German. My last name is Italian. And I was born in Seoul, South Korea. I'm adopted. I grew up in a very rough part of upstate New York where I was taunted and at times beat up by kids because I was and looked different. On some level, I was conditioned through this treatment to believe that being different was a bad thing, and so I avoided it. I've spent the bulk of my life rejecting my Asian American heritage. Quite frankly, as a Republican, this was very easy to do. The Republican Party's attitude toward anyone who isn't white speaks for itself. Why would I want to even pursue an association as a quote-unquote minority in a political party that spouts hateful rhetoric about minorities and pushes policies that discriminate against anyone who isn't white? It was a pretty cowardly attitude considering how many have been brave enough to take a stand and fight for minority rights and confront social injustice. All right, put aside for a moment his self-criticism, right? That dynamic of an Asian American kid who is taught by negative reinforcement that you do not want to stick out. You do not want to be different. And at one point, as he grows older, it just becomes internalized to the point where he doesn't even question about it. And this intense desire to conform in the context of where he is, he probably can't even imagine like not being a Republican. His parents probably were Republicans. It's easier for him to conceive of subjugating his own identity. That dynamic is extremely dangerous. That is the dynamic on how you get large groups of people to do horrible things that we can't really conceive of in our normal lives. You know, I don't want to go overboard here, but when you talk about how people can witness war crimes or atrocities or large-scale violence around groups of minorities, or how, I don't know, a kid of Latino heritage can be in a group of a bunch of white guys looking to beat up people who are throwing down the white power sign in pictures, how does that kid like rationalize it in his head? And he's not having to rationalize it in his head. The work has already been done. He is, there's enough, I don't know if self-hatred is the right word, because it's, that implies that it's very active. It has just been internalized in such a way.
Like an aversion.
An aversion, and there's a tremendous amount of denial associated with that. And
not to mention, whiteness is a historically malleable category, right? So it is conceivable, maybe in the minds of some people, that they could become white or accept it as such.
I don't think that's it, because I don't think he has that historical framework in his head at that point as he's sitting around with public. I don't think he knows that, like, hey, you know, the Irish were once considered not white. The Italians were once considered not white. Maybe if I wait, I think it's just more like, I think it's just, it's less intellectual, and it's just more a sense of like, if I keep my head down, everybody's acting like I'm one of them. Maybe, you know, like I don't come off. I think it's really just comes down to just a tremendous amount of fear. And I think he got jettisoned. You know, I think what happens is you grow older and then certain circumstances happen. And he goes on to say, once I stepped away from the Republican Party, its efforts to promote racism through rhetoric and policies offended me on a very personal level. I began engaging in these issues and exploring what it meant to be a minority in America. One of my favorite moments this year was participating in a panel at Politicon called Crazy Political Asians.
Oh, like the movie. I get it. It's super clever.
Yeah.
Politicon has this great way.
Let's not
of
get sidetracked.
Pop culture and right. politics. I just wanted to acknowledge
right,
it.
Right. At one point, the moderator, MSNBC's Richard Liu, asked our panel what each year of us owned up to being a member of the Asian American Pacific Islander community. Most people gave answers like kindergarten or middle school. My response was 2018. It may seem like a small thing, but saying this in public for the first time was a big deal for me. And this is sort of fascinating. I don't know what you do with this information. I mean, frankly, in terms of like looking at this stuff, but it is a fascinating view into that world. I imagine on some level, you know, there are all sorts of people who have that type of reckoning. Like at one point, like when I came out and acknowledged that I was gay, I realized like, why am I hanging around with these people for whom I've had to soft pedal this by my entire, you know, professional life or something like that. I have a feeling there was a lot of that at one point.
When he was talking about like how only Democrats talk about human rights and only Democrats care about them, like that's why I'm much more inclined to argue with liberals than conservatives, because if you don't have a basic framework of human rights to begin with that, like, I can't argue. We're not arguing from the same premise, you know?
Right. Exactly. I mean, I think on some level, that's what Adam Kokesh felt from me. If you don't have one set of principle that is your Bible, and then everything emanates out of those, that one commandment, then it doesn't make sense for us to discuss this, except for the fact that, like, we were talking about government, not
Samantha
religion.
Samantha has but no
yes,
ethics.
Yes. I think that's true. I think the value in arguing with and he's saying Democrats, and I think, you know, broadly, obviously, it's people on the left. But I think for him, it just became, sort of easier to say Republican, Democrat, because he's a professional. I think that's a good point. The value of arguing with conservatives about this stuff, it seems to me, is just to show other people who are within that spectrum of people who believe in human rights on some basic level that, like, they're toxic.
Yeah. And it's rare that they will come out and say that, but I have heard alt-right dudes say it, and it's shocking, but also, like, we need to make them say it more.
Yep. Absolutely. So there's the, we got the Senate bill that is just a matter of time before we see at least some of that on a federal level. Hopefully, the idea is that hopefully these federal guidelines start to trickle down to the states. That's the idea. And it helps activists, and it provides a toehold. And it's an indication, you know, maybe when there is some bipartisan legislation that passes on stuff like this, there'll be more of it going forward. All right. One other thing, I know we're bumping up against it a little bit, but one other thing I want to talk about before we go into the fun half is this Warren proposal from yesterday. And there's a couple of things happening in the Senate that are very interesting in terms of Democratic potential candidates for the presidency. So Elizabeth Warren yesterday, and I haven't seen the specific details of it, but she will release, or has, I think as of yesterday, released a bill that would effectively create a government-run pharmaceutical manufacturer to mass-produce generic drugs and bring down prices in the same process. The bill would establish an office of drug manufacturing that would be required to manufacture at least 15 generic drugs in its first year, where the agency determines there is a failure in the market. The standards for determining a market failure will be threefold. One, if no company is producing a generic drug. People get surprised by this, but this happens all the time. They don't produce a drug because there's not enough money to be made at it. I mean, which in and of itself is a perfect example of, I mean, they call it a market failure. This is not a market failure. This is intrinsic to capitalism. These are the intrinsic limitations to capitalism. The idea that there are no beneficial things in the world that can't, as defined by whether you can profit on it or not, is absurd. It's an absurd premise. We have examples all around us. Did you know that there is a Lyme disease vaccination, Michael?
No.
Coming from an area where there's a tremendous amount of Lyme disease.
Like, you can't go hiking.
Did you know
that?
Yeah, I've had it.
You had that?
No, Lyme disease.
Okay. The vaccination was rolled out about, I think, 30 some odd years ago. It was only about 70% effective, but 70% effective is pretty good.
Pretty good relative to getting a really, actually an incredibly damaging disease.
And it was just not enough people used it at the time. They took it off the market, has never been seen. They're probably sitting on the patent.
That's competition would start kicking in.
Right.
And even more, and you know, expanding it out, we know that there's whole sets of tropical and infectious diseases that predominantly hit, like, sub-Saharan Africa and parts of Asia, that there's just not even any broad research into dealing with them because there's no market
money.
There's no money in
it.
And we also know in the late 90s, the Clinton administration threatened to slap sanctions on South Africa because they were going to produce generics for their AIDS medications when their crisis was spiking.
Yep. So in this instance, one of the market failures is if no company is producing the drug. If one or two companies are making the drug and there's a shortage or a recent price hike higher than medical inflation, that would also kick in the drug manufacturing bureau, essentially. Or if the drug is on the World Health Organization's essential medicine list and the price is deemed too high while being produced by only one or two companies. So, but the idea of the U.S. government getting into producing a product, I'm trying to think if there's another example of that. This is a pretty, I mean, it's an obvious proposal. We should be doing this. We should be doing this with a bunch of stuff. I think we should be running the oil refineries, frankly. I think we should 100%. Be delivering the internet. But those are all sort of like more like services. In terms of products, I mean, frankly, I think we should be in the business of doing this not just for generic drugs. We should be doing this for a whole host of things.
Public, there should just be a pure public pharmaceutical option even before you go to nationalize all pharmaceuticals, which
there should
I would support.
Be a use it or lose it patent requirement. The right. idea that people are sitting on intellectual property that could save lives or improve the lives of people, and they're just sitting on it to prevent a competitor from getting it down the road is absurd.
I think, frankly, there should be a use it or lose it for all patents.
That's probably
the most important pharmaceutical ones, but intellectual property in terms of creative culture as well.
But she has pointed to that story about the 300 generic drugs and 16 companies that were price fixing as a sign that her policy is needed. But just like even in the short moment that we contemplate, you know, because one of the things that we have in this country is a failure to imagine like how government could continue to make our lives better. How could policies that are meant to that are not considered market or capitalist policies can improve our lives? And stuff like this starts to jog the imagination a little bit. Now, the interesting thing about this, now, of course, it's not going to we're not going to pass this in the Senate. I don't know how many even Democratic senators will sign on to it. We'll see. Last week, Merkley, Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar introduced the Cure High Drug Prices Act, which allows federal government to block price increases on certain drugs. That, in my mind, does not go far enough, but I like it. Again, Merkley put forward separate legislation, the Low Drug Prices Act. A week earlier, Bernie Sanders introduced his own bill, the Prescription Drug Price Relief Act, in November. You see a lot of activity. All of those people could very well run for the presidency. However, and maybe we'll do that bet thing later. We're going to pre-record something with Perrine for next week. But I think, particularly coming after that meeting that Warren and Sanders had last week, this is a sign to me that Sanders may not be running because if I'm Elizabeth Warren. And I'm running, and I know that Sanders is running. Now, maybe he hasn't decided yet, which is quite possible. But
who knows?
This is a very risky thing for her to do because this is a pretty radical piece of legislation. I mean, I think she's very good at presenting things that are radical in the context of the United States, where we're at politically, but just making them sound a little bit more sort of like obvious and homespun on some level. But this is a pretty she's leaning into it quite a bit. And if she's going to be running against Bernie Sanders, the lane she's going to choose is not going to be to the left of Bernie Sanders. The lane she's going to choose is going to be just to the right of Bernie Sanders. And this policy puts her to the left of Bernie Sanders.
Or maybe she's trying to appropriate some of his politics to win.
I think he does that if Sanders is not there. I mean, look, you pick a lane in a primary. And it's quite possible that that lane on the left of her is opened up. That's exactly my point, is that she's not going to try and out Bernie Sanders to Bernie Sanders because no Bernie Sanders supporters are going to abandon him for her because she's got more left policies. They're going to abandon him for her because they think that she can win. Her policies are good enough or whatever it is. And so her lane is not to the left of Bernie Sanders, unless Bernie Sanders is not going to be there, in which case then she needs to bring those people in. This is just my theory.
It also could be possible that she's savvy enough to recognize that the plates, that the dynamics are shifting so much that she needs to, in the context even of this primary, to be slightly to the right of him, but theoretically more palatable, although the polling doesn't show that. She needs to reach a little bit deeper into her left flank. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yep. Yep. It's possible. I guess time will tell.
But it ices out the other people trying to do that,
and
too.
And it totally ices out. But, right, because like a guy like Sherrod Brown at this point, who I think is another good candidate, but he's fully playing that lane, which is like, I have a more serious, legislative, incredible progressive labor record. I'll stack that against anybody. And he's very clearly like, I'm not going to call for abolishing ICE. I'm not going to do Medicare for All yet, because he's totally going the lane of like, I'm a legislator, I'm serious, right, I'm going to run in the Midwest, blah, blah, blah. And so Elizabeth Warren is actually going to triangulate between those two positions. And I think she needs to shore up her flank on her left.
We'll see. Merkley and Sherrod Brown also introduced legislation that would permanently ban members of Congress and senior staff from trading individual stocks. The idea that, you can even do that now is just absurd. Well, what we've seen, but it's interesting. This is the thing, you know, there's a little bit of like a racehorsey stuff to the quality of this, but the other part that's really great about it is introducing this legislation is a sense of where, gives you a sense of where these candidates are going to run. And it gives you a sense of just like what's happening in the Democratic Party is very encouraging, because there is a certain clamoring, even if people want to be rooted in the, like, I mean, I don't, any, none of these people we're talking about seem to be want to be rooted in the center of the Democratic Party. But to the extent that they want to be anchored a certain distance away from that center, they're still the drift, the current is to the left. And so, you know, everybody, they may drop their anchor, but if you look at the direction in which the chain that is attached to their boat is, it's all tracking to the left.
100%.
Yeah, and that's encouraging, but I still want to make the distinction between rhetoric and policy, right? Because we've heard...
Well, these are policy
proposals. A lot.
Policy proposals.
But yeah, are they actually going to prioritize those things once they're in office? And I think you need to look at someone's past record for evidence of that.
I agree with that 100%.
And right? Who gives them money.
But the other big question, and how mobilized and aggressive their base is and what they need to satisfy in the context of holding on power.
The idea is that the more people glam on to, and by people I mean like actual people, attach themselves to these policies, the more weight they have to give them. You know, like if you see a policy that that a candidate has and you like that policy, start to organize around it and create and make it something that they can't let go of. That's the idea.
Now, I don't know. This actually article doesn't seem that revelatory, and I don't know how well connected, but Jonathan Martin in the New York Times, his report on this meeting is Sanders and Warren meet and agree that they're both probably running.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that doesn't, I'm reading into it and it doesn't, it all it conveys is like they're friendly and they respect each other and they're talking, which could just as easily mean what Sam's saying it means.
Who knows?
Or it can mean like, hey, we're both going to run, but let's try to not tear each other apart because we're in a similar lane. Or it could mean that she's saying, I'm not going to run and I want more specific wonky things from you.
Right.
This is what I thought was going to happen. And I'm so annoyed that we have to talk about the presidential race in 2020 already. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking policy.
No, I know. It's just very triggering for me. I talk about it too, though. It's fine. I get really invested in it. I'm not ready.
Yeah, everything will be fine.
I'm looking forward to Cory Booker like proposing like summary executions for Sheldon Adelson or something. He's like super on it. Cory Booker's like, I think all oligarchs actually need to be put to death. That's the most spiritually sound strategy.
I don't like Adelson's forward. The first one he's going to go after.
AOC? No, Rashida Tlaib. She's tough.
All right. Well, listen, we got to take a break ahead into the fun half. Folks, just a reminder, this program relies on your support. to keep its wheels chugging, and now offers a glimpse at the Brandon Starka debate that people are talking about.
That was so funny, oh, man. God. Jesus Christ. Some of the best pieces of...
It really
sort of cringe watch internet content of the year.
Yeah,
I think you made your own walk away.
There
like
you go.
Walk away from walk away. Well, walk back.
That's right. Everybody turn around and get to do a 360. I got to come up with a better hashtag and then trademark it.
First things first, we got to trademark it. That's the beginning of any movement.
Why are we doing a live show and not just a big banquet dinner where people give us money?
Yeah,
like $250.
$350 banquet. When I said, what did you do with that $300,000? He goes, well, you got to pay for the banquet. And I'm like, wait a second, but didn't you make money off that?
Well, there's patents, there's legal fees.
Nobody has, exactly. That's what I love it. Everything's legal fees.
Or maybe apropos.
Like, wait a second, what legal fees? I got news for you. Everybody, well, not everybody in this room, but at least two of us in this room have started, a business by filing for an LLC or an S corp or something like that. And I suppose you get a file,
I'm still paying it.
You
off.
Can file for a 503C or whatever it is, but the lawyer fees are maybe like anywhere from like $500 to like maybe $2,000 if things get. I mean, I'm just
That's
thinking
a lot.
Like I'm just thinking like, well, things got really complicated,
should
and
cost
I wanted.
You
can I have a different binder for this?
Yeah. It should cost like, you $700.
You can't say if you're saying like, where did the $100,000 go? And the words legal fees hit your mouth, you know there's something going on. That
Before
is a lie.
Before we begin marching on the salt march. To speak our truth to the British about their use of aggression in taxation in India, we need to hire a copywriter. It is the beginning of every movement.
I don't care like how much you're spending on that website and the video that you have from YouTube.
Oh,
I mean, like, there's just no way.
Just like
you should have asked him, how do you have money if you don't make any money off of this?
Well,
libertarian
I'm not,
Gandhi.
He doesn't say he didn't make any money off.
Yeah, he
said he doesn't draw a salary.
He doesn't draw a salary. Well,
it's because I'm smart.
Yeah, I don't draw a salary. I take it all as a dividend, as an S corp dividend or something. Or it just pays for his house.
More and more people are walking away.
There are people I know who
the Congress Party.
I'm not going to say the name. It's not important. That person's not really in the picture much. But somebody at one point told me they were going to start a PAC, and I was like, okay. And they're like, I'm not going to take any salary from that PAC. I go, okay, great. And then you start to realize, like, oh, what they're doing is the PAC is paying for them, is covering all their expenses to go, and then they're going to get paid through a different entity or something to that effect. Like, there's just shenanigans with this stuff. And there's no doubt in my mind. And this dude's not going to, like, you know, I only own
my loincloth.
Yeah, I want a forensic audit before I come on and do your Skype show or whatever it is. That should have been my
demands.
Just like, how are you paying your rent right now, dude?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you have a job?
I just feel like that's an inappropriate question in this context.
Wait, there's also nothing. I mean, look, the problem is the whole premise. Like, I don't begrudge a guy doing political action and making a living off of it. I begrudge what he's doing.
Right. That's right. The point is there is absolutely no sincerity to what he's talking about
but
whatsoever.
He also kind of lied when he said he doesn't make money off of it, right?
No, he didn't say he didn't make money
he didn't
off.
Say that. Okay. Yeah, he did not say that.
Now,
very tricky.
Hey, girl who blocked Sam from talking to people.
Let me put it this way. Look, what he could have done, okay, and still be in, have told me truthfully, he's like, okay, I'm going to pay, the walk away campaign is going to pay $25,000 for the gala, all the expenses. And I'm going to keep every $250 that comes in. So all the expenses are paid by the company and any revenue that comes in. The company is going to pay for t-shirts, but I'm going to collect the revenue from the t-shirts. I mean, stuff like that.
more money.
I need to learn more about the ins and outs of grifting. Yes.
That's what it is. It's basically you get an entity that pays the cost of everything. So he could, like, he could have the company pay for another, you know, all the email blasts for another campaign and just collect all the money from that.
You see,
and that's basically that's what Donald Trump did with the Trump Foundation.
Well, then that's also like what most every oligarch does with their foundation.
Well, they
like,
have,
Trump was just sloppier,
right? Right.
I should start a pack. Damn.
Honestly, you start a pack, and it's like I'm not going to take any money, but that pack is going to send you around the country. It's going to pay for your hotels. It's going to pay for your per diem. You got to eat, and it's going to pay for your transportation. And then you go to events and get paid as Jamie.
Sounds pretty good.
There I'm going to lease a TNBS car. It's going to be like an Escalade. Like a Green New Deal bumper sticker.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Like I say, join themajorityreport.com. Not a penny of that money that goes to jointhemajorityreport.com goes into anything except for side businesses that allow for us to maximize the profit through a special tax loophole. So, today is Wednesday. Oh, don't forget justcoffee.coop. You missed the 30% off, but you can still save 10% with your coupon code majority at justcoffee.coop. Michael.
Today is Wednesday. Yesterday we... Whoa. You all right, Matt?
Matt, do you need a new chair? We need a GoFundMe. Joking.
Matt's going to get hurt.
We're going to set up a 503C that's going to get the chair.
So great. TMBS, where there's a thematic weave between covering the 2009 coup in Honduras, the caravan, and there's actually a pathway to the interview we had with Valeska Martins, who's Lula da Silva's co-counselor. And that was obviously a very meaningful interview on the imprisonment of Lula, lawfare against him, U.S. foreign policy. Please watch it. That's getting passed around some circles in Brazil right now, and people are very enthused that we did that, which is great.
Did
and,
you say a pathway?
Well, I think this 2009 coup in Honduras is both a major part of the caravan story because Manuel Zelaya was moving in a much more sort of basically just social democratic.
No, I'm saying, did you say a pathway to the interview?
Yes, because Lula, when he was president, gave Manuel Zelaya shelter at the Brazilian embassy in Tegucigalpa and resisted the U.S. coup policy that way. So there was just a connection between the Honduras story and the Lula story.
Oh,
because
a connection.
Of the, like,
I thought you were saying like you have basically to find the interview, you have to...
Oh, no. Yeah, there's a special Dropbox. No, okay. There's a link of like the U.S. reversal of pink tide governments,
I
basically.
Okay.
So that was incredibly meaningful to us. Check it out on either patreon.com/TMBS or Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. Tomorrow, because we're doing no show next week, Big Waz is coming in live in studio, and we're doing another show tomorrow. And we're more than halfway sold out for our February 1st show at the Bell House, so get your tickets. See you there.
Jamie.
Out now on
what
the
is
Antifada.
The Antifada?
I'm assuming, are you affiliated with Antifa?
It's actually a pack that I live off of. You can come to our Antifa conference pretty soon. It only costs $500 to come. This week on the Antifada, we have on Alex Patak of our fellow goth socialist podcast Pod Damn America, as well as his own podcast Ballin' Out Super. He's a very funny guy. We talked with him about some pressing issues of the day, including radicalizing wine moms, Penthouse's fascist turn and Teen Vogue's leftist turn. Why did Amazon think they could bring their subsidized helipad HQ to NYC with no consequences when this is a goddamn union town? And we have a little 2 minutes chait on the scabbiest scab who ever did scab. I'm talking, of course, about Jonathan Chait, who is whining still about his coworkers at New York Magazine forming a union.
He's such a loser.
All right, we're going to take a
literary hangover.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Oh, I'm releasing Anne Bradstreet for members tonight, so you'll get an early episode for people who pay.
All right, folks. See you in the fun half.